Are you ready? It's time for On the Double with the Double S Express. Great sports talk and big time guests with Sean Wally and Sean Boyd. On the Double with the Double S Express.
Said no more counting dollars, we'll be counting stars. Yeah, we'll be counting stars.
Hello, once again, everybody. Welcome to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally going solo tonight. Sean Boyd will be back with us next week. And let's go right out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcome in Jerry Weinstein of the Colorado Rockies organization, the catching instructor for the Colorado Rockies. Jerry, thanks so much for your time tonight.
You bet, Sean. My pleasure.
Jerry, you've been around baseball for many, many years and coaching through all different ranks. Catching is such, there's so many different aspects to it. What are some of the intangibles that players today have to have to be a great catcher in baseball?
Well, I mean, most people, you know, look at the throwing and in the continuum of what's important in catching. That's probably the last thing, because the stolen base has lost significance in baseball, you know, with all the statistical studies they've done. And catching is number one, blocking is number two, game management is number three. How you interface with the pitching staff, how much trust you engender, your pitch calling skills, your personal leadership skills, those become very important.
And I would think that a lot of people that are just novice baseball fans, maybe played up through high school or maybe not even that far, don't really think about all the intricacies that are involved with the mental side of the pitcher catcher battery.
Yeah, that's gigantic. That trust and confidence, just from the pitch calling standpoint, how you give your signals, how deliberate you are, or how confident you are in giving your signals, the overall preparation, in between starts, the time you spend with your starting pitchers, catching their sides and bullpens, and just, communication you have with them in the locker room between games, especially on the big league level, and with the volume of information that we have when we prepare for a game, it's a full-time job.
Now, back when you were playing, who were some of the guys that you modeled yourself after and wanted to be like and help pave you on to your coaching after your playing days were over?
Well, Roy Campanella was my guy. I was in California at a time where there was no big league baseball, and we had the Coast League, and obviously saw a lot of Coast League games living in Southern California as a kid. But the guy that was my hero was Roy Campanella with the Brooklyn Dodgers, and then later on, I worked for the Dodgers. I was the director of player development, and there's Campanella way there, and there's the string area that where Campy held court, and there's a rebound wall there. So that was a thrill.
Now, you spent a lot of your coaching career at Sacramento City College, 23 years with an unbelievable 80% winning percentage, where you had 16 championships, two state titles there in California, as well as a national championship. What does that time at Sacramento City College mean to you?
Well, that was, of all my coaching stops, and I've, coached from high school on up through, had time in the big leagues. That's been, the one stop that was probably the most relevant for me, because we had just had tremendous players. It was a time where it wasn't a heavily recruited area, so we were getting a lot of players that four-year schools are getting now. We had 35 guys play in the big leagues there, and only two or three of them were drafted at before they came to Sac City. So we had a lot of time to develop them. We had built a $4 million plus facility out of basically nothing, because the community participated, and especially the building and trades council in Sacramento. And it was a great place to bring up a family and to have a long coaching tenure.
You're a member of four Hall of Fames, the majority of which are in California, the California Community College Baseball Hall of Fame, Sacramento City College Athletic Hall of Fame, among others. What does it mean to you to get that honor?
Well, those are all nice, but, you know, it's all about the players because, you know, I didn't throw very many pitches or catch very many or hit very many home runs. You know, it's basically the players. And so if you have good players, chances are, you know, you're going to have you're going to get those types of opportunities. I say it's all about the inmates. And so we had a great run there for a long period of time. And it was just a perfect storm for us relative to being in a great community that was very baseball-oriented and climate was right. And then number of great high school coaches in the area and everything was just right for us. And I'm in those halls because of those players, not because of anything necessarily that I did that was so outstanding.
That's the voice of Jerry Weinstein, the Major League catching coach for the Colorado Rockies. Jerry, it would seem that catching is such a specialized position in the sport of baseball that, as we already hit on, you have to be into the game mentally. It's a lot more to it than just catching a baseball. It's a very tough position from the fact that you have to be flexible, you have to understand the game, you have to help call the defenses from the signals that your coaching staff is giving you. What does it take for kids today to go from maybe the high school level to have a career in college and maybe even the minor leagues onto the pros as a catcher?
You know, before we go on, Sean, I should correct you on one thing. This year, what I'm doing is I'm working more in a front office position, and I'm the offensive coordinator. And the last couple of years, I've handled the big league catching, and I've also did all the defensive positioning. But to get back to your question relative for a young player, it's a pretty cerebral position, and you have to have information, and so you have to be a learner, and you have to go out there and you know, ask good questions. And the internet there are a lot of good resources out there for information, and talking to professional catchers or talking to college coaches or college catchers or just being a good observer. You see the preponderance of managers now in the big leagues that are ex-catchers. You can see that those people gathered a lot of information. It's not just about catching. It's you learn the whole game being behind the plate because you have to attack hitters. So you have to have information on what makes hitters successful and what keeps them from being successful. You're the most closely linked to the coaches on that field, especially the pitching coach and the manager, because you're carrying out their game plan.
Jerry, what are your thoughts on the new major league rules about not being able to block the plate as a catcher?
Well, I think there's a little bit of a misnomer there. I think if you're in possession of the ball, you can block the plate, but you can't block the plate without the ball. And I think overall, I think it's a good rule. I think that anything that can protect the well-being of the players is a good one. And I think that opening up a lane for base runners to slide and not blocking the plate without the ball, where you not only you put yourself in jeopardy, but you put the runner in jeopardy. And you know, the best thing that can happen in those situations is no one gets hurt. But I think that the new rules, and once again, I'm a little more fine-tuned, I think overall will be a good thing.
Now, Jerry, you have your own website where you help these catchers, and you have a lot of tips, and you can be reached at coachingcatchers.com. You've also got a book, The Complete Handbook of Coaching Catchers, and talk about your website a little bit.
Well, you know, really, Sean, that website is just to sell the book. I don't have any communication with people on that website, but what I have done to promote the website, I've done a lot of stuff on Twitter, which is, you know, totally foreign to me, or it was, and I have like over 5,300 followers right now. So when people, I post something, usually post something once or twice a day, and I've had a lot of people leave me messages, and I've gotten back to them and answered questions. But I don't have a blog or anything like that. I just don't have time to do that because with my job right now, I'm traveling a lot. I'm on the road 2 to 3 weeks a month, so I don't have time to do that. But I usually through the Twitter, which is at JW on catching, I do answer any questions that people have if I have time to do that.
How much has social media changed the game of baseball and the job that you do?
Well, I would say just the internet in itself, because the volume of good information that's out there, and I've just been on this this Twitter thing for maybe 3 months, and I've been amazed how much interchange or exchange I've had with different people, and I think the players use it all the time. I think maybe too much. I think some of the locker room cohesiveness and the locker room chemistry things and communication within the locker room has suffered as a result of it. But I think overall it's a good thing.
The current state of Major League Baseball, it seems like a lot of teams are hovering right around 500, a few games up, a few games under. You know, you've got the Braves, the A's, the Giants that are doing really, really well. Is it fair to say that there might be a little bit of parity happening in the league right now?
Well, just based on the records, I would say yes. I mean, it might be a little bit too early to tell. And, you know, there have been an inordinate number of injuries, and that kind of brings people back to the middle, too, when you have to replace players with that are injured. But I would say that if the early results are meaningful, then I would say that there is probably a little bit more parity.
Yeah, it definitely seems that way when you've got the high-spending teams in terms of payroll, like the Yankees and the Red Sox, not running away with the division, and you've always got the Oakland A's right there with, you know, their Billy Bean and the whole Moneyball thing. And it's great to see that talent can be at any level, and it doesn't always have to be at the $200 million payroll, and the talent can actually win out.
Well, yeah, you know, I've always said that the best nine beat the nine best, and you can spend a lot of money and get an all-star group of players, but, you know, chances of winning all-star games are good, but over the long haul, the best team, the best group of players is going to win for you.
And moving forward with the Rockies, what are you hoping to have happen here the rest of the way here in 2014?
Well, we started off really good, and we've kind of leveled out a little bit. We're at 500 right now, but we have a scary offensive lineup. I think when Nolan Arenado went down, I think that hurt us a little bit, and I think that you know, we've had our share of injuries too with Brett Anderson going down. And those guys will be healthy, and they'll help as it goes. Just starting pitching is so key that when you lose guys like Tyler Chatwood and Brett Anderson, that hurts and it puts a little bit more of a burden on your bullpen. It averages out. You know, that's what batting average. You don't hit 300 every day. You'll go for periods where you might hit or play at a 600 clip, and then you might, like our last road trip, we were 2-7, and we had a couple walk-off losses and a couple games that we had won that we didn't win. But, you know, that makes things interesting, and I think that we have a very, very exciting lineup with especially the way Tulo's playing right now, and guys like Michael Kadire, who for me is the standard of how you should play this game.
Yeah, Kadire's always been a consistent pro, and Troy Tulowitzki's a perennial all-star for the Rockies. And, you know, that NL West is always a tough division, and definitely best of luck the rest of the way in 2014.
Thanks, Sean. Appreciate it. Very nice talking to you.
Jerry Weinstein, thank you so much for your time. You can follow him on Twitter, JW on Catching, and you can get his book, The Complete Handbook of Coaching Catchers, available at coachingcatchers.com. It's great talking to Jerry Weinstein. And that's right, coming up next, the green and gold lives in Seattle. The great Kevin Calabro, play-by-play man, coming up. Looks like your coach is about to cry. All the fools on your bench going out like hoot cries. The
boys in green and gold can't be faded. And ain't now brother on the team getting traded. Thumb to the hole, you better bring a snowplow. Dunks get tossed when you come to this house. It ain't that easy, G.
No, not now, house.
We ain't letting y'all sing no threes.
No, not now, house. Don't even think about...
What's my image?
What's my image?
What's my image?
At Images Barbershop and Styles, you get the best cut, the best design, and the best styles in the Sacramento area. Plus the affordable price, along with the fun, family-friendly atmosphere, you'll walk away with a look of satisfaction and the feeling of a new you. Do you have your image?
We have ours!
Images Barbershop and Styles, located at 10040 Bruceville Road, Elk Grove, California, Suite 140. For appointments, call 916-271-0218. That's Images Barbershop and Styles.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally going solo tonight. Sean Boyd will be back with us next week. And we're going right back out to the holysmokenuts.com phone lines and welcoming in big time guest number two tonight. And that is play-by-play announcer Kevin Calabro. Kevin, thanks so much for your time tonight.
My pleasure, Sean. How you doing?
Good, Kevin. Man, have you had a chance to rest now that the conference finals are over? You get to breathe for a couple days?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I just got back Sunday night, and it's good to be back in the Northwest, particularly with the weather's like this. We've been doing a lot of grilling and doing some hiking and doing, you know, everything you do when the weather's great here in the Northwest. And heading back on the airplane to San Antonio on Wednesday for Game 1 of the finals. Looking forward to it. Should be a whale of a finals.
Yeah, San Antonio, Miami, the Spurs wanted the Heat, and they're getting their wish, and it should be a great series for you to call there on ESPN Radio, and you've been doing that for a number of years now, and how do you like being traveling a lot more? Of course, not with the one team like you were with the Sonics for 20, 21 years from 87 to 2008, and you are the lead play-by-play guy there on ESPN Radio.
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's fun to see different teams, you know, see different cities, obviously, and not doing as many games. I think I'll end up doing about 45 games this year, and, of course, the NBA schedule is 82 with 8-game exhibition. It's a little different when you're able for 41 of those games to be able to, you know, drive downtown Seattle from our place over here in Redmond and do a broadcast for a team that, of course, you know and love and have a direct affiliation with and relationships certainly with the coaches and the players and importantly, the fans as well. That's, I think, the biggest part of that, the equation that I miss, is there's just obviously no contact with the fans. You know, when you go into San Antonio, people don't know who I am. I can't really express a bias one way or the other, favoritism for one team or the other. So I really miss that interaction with the fans that used to get on a regular basis when I go down to Key Arena and do the Sonic games. But hopefully that... you know, that will change sooner rather than later, and we can get a team back here in the Northwest, because I know the fans really miss NBA basketball in this area.
What are your thoughts on Chris Hansen and the whole arena deal with the city and the county? There's some that believe they should go ahead and get it built, and that'll be easier to get a team. And Chris Hansen wants to wait it out and have the team first.
Well, I think the equation you talked about, in order to get a building done now, you'd have to have a team, whether it be NBA or NHL. And Hansen, in the past, has been hesitant to go that direction because he just doesn't have the passion for the NHL that he does for the NBA. So the deal was structured that an NBA team would come first and then a hockey team would come later. But if, like you say, the numbers work out and he has some willing partners out there that want to do hockey and move hockey into the arena ahead of the NBA, and the city and the county go along with it because they'd have to rework an agreement that they've already struck with Hansen that expressly and specifically says that NBA basketball would come first, then I think that maybe the stars would align and you'd get the best of both worlds. You'd have hockey in the Emerald City with basketball to come. But there's been no promise from the NBA of expansion. There's been a hint of expansion from the NHL. And as it stands now, there really are no teams that are ready to move in the NHL that I'm aware of anyway, now that Phoenix has gotten their situation solidified down there. So it's kind of a complicated process because these guys really have got a great plan together and they've been on top of it, really been working the plan quite hard. And Hansen, I think, as recently as this week, since Ballmer has gone on and made his bid with the Clippers, Hansen has said that he'd be a little more agreeable, I think, now to partner with somebody that wanted to do hockey and do the arena with hockey coming in as the first tenant. So that's all positive news.
Kevin Calabro joining me here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Kevin, in 2008, when unfortunately the Sonics moved ship to Oklahoma City, you've had 6 years to look back on that now. And how did that affect you personally?
Well, I mean, you don't have a job anymore. And of course, it was at the height, it was in the recession, 2008, the big recession hit started to wave over and spread over us in September that year. And of course, the Sonics had already moved and my contract came to an end in October of that year. So, you're first and foremost, you're without a job. So, you got to look around and figure out, all right, what am I going to do now? We had the opportunity to move to Oklahoma City, but I got outvoted here at the house. So we just didn't feel like that was going to be right for us, for the family. The kids were all in school, and that just wasn't a situation that was going to work. And, we didn't have any contacts or relationships in Oklahoma City at all, and I didn't want to commute. And I had done the NBA thing for 21 years, so I just decided that I would use the equity that I'd built up in Seattle as a guy that had been there a long time and to go hunt and see what was available. And as it turned out, the soccer team, the Sounders, of course, came online that year. We started a new talk show here in Seattle at 710 on ESPN. So I was doing an afternoon talk show. I was doing soccer. And then ESPN called and wanted to know if I could do some games on television for a couple of years and was already doing the radio. So, I think if you just stay patient and stay with a plan, things have a tendency to work out. So I've been blessed, really, and very lucky to get the amount of work that I have since the Sonics left town. But again, it's like everybody else. It's left a huge void in our lives. I mean, our kids used to go to the games, and they were regulars at all the games. And as young adults, they'd love to see NBA basketball back here. So it hit us pretty hard, like it did a lot of people in the area.
For all the green and gold faithful out there, you were with the Sonics from 87 until they left in 2008. Too many games to narrow it down to just one, but do you have a few favorite moments, a few favorite events that pop into your head right off the top?
Yeah, I mean, the role that we got on, certainly in the year that George Karl arrived and when Casey Jones was relieved of his duties with a 500-ball climb, George came on and we went something like that. I think it was 27-15 to the end of the year and got ourselves in the playoffs and took on the Golden State Warriors and beat the Golden State Warriors in the first round in George's first year here with first partial year with the club. That's when Gary Payton and Sean Kemp, Sam Perkins, Nate McMillan, they really came together as a big-time unit. And you could see that there was going to be a whole lot of upside and a lot of wins with that team. And so over a period of 5 years, they were winning an average of 56-57 games a year, which is just remarkable. And the second winningest team in the league in 95 when the Chicago Bulls had the winningest team in the league at 72. The Sonics checked in at 64. So I think any of those playoff games and any of the games that led up to the World Championship in 95 were certainly the highlights. You know, that pivotal game against Utah, the way Kemp played down the stretch in that game against Karl Malone, and the way Gary Payton matched up against John Stockton. So those would probably be the most memorable. And then Ray Allen had some terrific individual efforts after he was traded from Milwaukee for Gary Payton. We had a great year in 05 when the club won 52 games, I believe it was, and we played the eventual world champions that year, the San Antonio Spurs, and played them tough, beat Sacramento in the first round, and then played San Antonio, I think, as tough as they had it in that playoff run that they had to the championship that year. You know, that was a year that we had, I think, something like six free agents on the team. Nick Collison was a rookie playing in his first season. His first full year, he was out with shoulder surgery. We had guys like Luke Ridnour, Antonio Daniels, Ray Allen was on that club, Jerome James. I mean, Vladimir Radvanovich. We had a team of really just kind of no-name guys, but they all just came together as a squad, and Nate McMillan was the coach, Mr. Sonic. And it was just unfortunate that things then began to unravel in 05 when, Nate was hired by the Portland Trailblazers, and then our assistant coach, Dwayne Casey, was hired by the Minnesota Timberwolves as their head coach. So it didn't last long, and I look back on that year, and we experienced the highs and the lows that year because I think had they been able to keep Nate McMillan around and build around that core of talent, they might have been a better product. There might have been more interest, more passion, and the owner may have had more passion, Howard Schultz, for the club, more interest in the club at that time, financial interest in the club at that time, and may have been able to keep it in town. But, you know, you look back, boy, you'd sure like to change some of those things in the past, but there's no changing them now. You can only look forward and keep your head up.
Kevin, you mentioned that one of the things you missed are being able to build the relationships. And do you have any of those relationships still ongoing, whether it be some of the former Sonic players, coaches, employees at all?
Oh, yeah, I see everybody. You know, everybody, you know, kind of disbanded when the Sonics left town and they went their separate ways. And, you know, I've got two good friends that work for the Oklahoma City Thunder and their traveling group. One's the team workout and strength and conditioning coach, Dwight Dobb, whose son is the lead man, does the same job with the Oregon Ducks, so he's still got some ties here in the Northwest. And the other is Mark Sainazzi, equipment manager, who had been with the Sonics since he was 15 or 16 years old. I mean, Mark goes way back with the franchise. I know Scotty Brooks quite well. I really like him and enjoy his company. A really good man. I got to know him a little bit when he was an assistant with the Sonics the last couple of years. And then, most of the players that played for the Sonics that are still active. I see Ray all the time in the Miami series. Richard Lewis, I think, is going to be a factor in the Miami series. OC Richard, you know, he's always got a kind word. Nick Collison, Kevin Durant, got to know him a little bit the one year that he was here, certainly. So, yeah, any number of guys that I see in the league. Nate McMillan's an assistant now with the Indiana Pacers. Dwayne Casey's doing a great work out there in Toronto. Saw him this winter and did actually, it was kind of a thrill. I got a chance to do a TNT game, one of their playoff games in Toronto that Dwayne was coaching. So that was fun to see him and do one of his games. So it's a fraternity, and you stay in touch with all these guys, no question. It'd be great to see him back in Seattle in some capacity sometime soon.
Kevin, do you ever think of the irony, especially now doing a lot of the Oklahoma City Thunder games in the playoffs, that, number one, that was the old Sonics, and, of course, now with Miami, you mentioned Ray Allen, Richard Lewis, so a lot of former Sonics playing in this finals upcoming, and then what you just had there in the conference finals.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of bittersweet. It's a little difficult. I'll be honest, it is difficult going into that building and see the team that I feel it rightfully should be Seattle's. But again, that deal was done, and the city, Mayor Nichols, and the council decided that they would take $45 million in return for 41 years of a history and part of the heart of the city. You know, I fault them. I fault Howard Schultz for selling the club to somebody who he knew was going to move it out of town. I fault Clay Bennett, who, you know, came to town with actually no intention at all of building a building, with all the intentions of moving the team to Oklahoma City. You know, I fault David Stern, who allowed it to happen. I fault the league, who turned their back on Seattle. So, you know, you try not to get too bitter about it, but all those feelings, you know, I think come rushing over you when you, when I roll into Oklahoma City and do a game out there. But look, they that's a first class organization. I'll be the first to tell you they do it right. Sam Presti's a brilliant general manager. They've got a terrific young coach. Ownership spends money on the club. They were blessed to have, you know, such a great talent like Kevin Durant, and then I think a Hall of Fame talent in Russell Westbrook in the draft. You know, Westbrook was the last first-round draft choice that Seattle had. He actually was drafted as a Sonic that year. Here they moved away. So, you know, I've got nothing against the organization now, but, you know, just I think still some hard feelings about the way that thing happened.
Kevin, moving on to a more positive subject that you know very well, play-by-play. What are some keys that you would tell some high schoolers or college students that want to do what you do for a living?
Well, I'd say if that's your dream, then, you know, make a plan, stay with it. Start small and work your way up. Take any job in radio or television you can get your hands on and learn as much as you can about that job. You know, it may not be play-by-play, but, you know, like I was, I did news on weekends. I was a disc jockey. I would occasionally be thrown a bone and allowed to do a high school game here or there. I was lucky enough to have a high school station that was actually doing some games. I went to a college that had a D1 program, Butler University, that broadcast basketball as well. If you're lucky enough that your parents can, you know, help you out financially if you're going to school, or if you feel like you really feel strong enough about a program and, you know, you want to take a student loan and pay your way through school, work your way through school and radio and television, I would suggest doing that. However, I'll tell you, that's not necessarily the path to success in this business. Getting out and doing it is the success. College isn't always a successful route when it comes to play-by-play or when it comes to being on the air or so forth. Getting a good education certainly is, no question about that. But, you know, the traditional four-year school, I think, is something that my generation was weaned to believe in. I'm no longer a big believer in that. I think you can go to trade schools or broadcast schools. The other suggestion I make to young people is read everything you possibly can, be as well-rounded, as educated as you possibly can, so that you can be flexible, be versatile to your prospective employers, you know, and go to a market where you can do everything, where you can do a talk show, where you can do some news, where you can be a disc jockey, where you can go out and do your own engineering on the weekend and go do high school games and that type of thing, and then develop yourself as a statistician and a broadcaster and as your own color guy, that type of thing. So, you know, there are no easy paths, but if you want it bad enough, you know, you can go out and get it. And then I think in game, the thing you have to remember is once you get a game is people tune in to hear one thing. They don't tune in necessarily to hear your voice or your spectacular analysis of the game. They tune in to hear the score. Always give the score, followed by the time, the quarter you're in, and then you can describe the play, so forth, and describe some of the strategy, and the players are on the floor. But it's always essential to give the score and time. It's remarkable the number of times I'll listen to big-time broadcasters, and I'll sit there and wonder, what in the world is the score? You know, this is a great description of the play-by-play. It's, and you know, it's terrific, but what's the score? So that would be my one big nugget if you do get a chance to do some play-by-play.
That's the voice of legendary play-by-play announcer Kevin Calabro, longtime play-by-play man for the Seattle Supersonics, now the lead radio announcer on ESPN Radio for the NBA, and he's heading to San Antonio to start the NBA Finals here in a couple days. Kevin, thanks so much for your time tonight. It's been a pleasure having you here on The Double.
Well, it's been my pleasure to talk to you and your audience tonight, Sean. Thanks very much. Let's do it again.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Have a great night. Kevin Calabro.
Right, take care.
Thank you for your time. Great insight from Mr. Calabro on what it was like when the Sonics left, what it's like now going into Oklahoma City and there seeing their success. Great candid talk there with Kevin Calabro. our second big-time guest tonight. And guess what? Normally we only have two. Tonight we have three here on the double. And coming up after the break, you'll want to stick around as we'll be continuing to talk some Sonics and possible NHL arena and teams with King 5 reporter Chris Daniels. That's coming up after this on the double with the Double S Express.
Who likes the inconvenience of car repairs? Not only do car repairs take time and money from you, but can you even trust your repair shop? Nate, Dave, and the team at Platinum Automotive Services in Tri-Cities, Washington are honest and trustworthy, and they take great care of your vehicle. From the basic oil change to full engine rebuilds, they do it all. Like the Platinum Automotive Services Facebook page for a shot at a free oil change. Platinum Automotive Services. Platinum service without the platinum price.
Guys, are you having trouble getting to sleep? Would you like to know the secret to getting a great night's sleep every night? Bruce Feeney discovered this secret. A new, all-natural sleep aid for men. Listen to what he says about it.
Hey, you know, I tried a product recently called Love to Sleep. It was a great product. Helped me a lot. Took 3 or 4 days for it to start working in my system, and I fell asleep very quickly and got up rested. And if I got up during the middle of the night, I ended up coming back to bed and fell right back to sleep. I would recommend it to all my friends.
If you, too, would love to get a good night's sleep every night and wake up feeling great in the morning, try Love to Sleep, the new sleep aid for men. Your satisfaction is 100% guaranteed. And because Love to Sleep is all natural, it's completely safe, with no side effects or risk of dependency. Go to lovetosleep.com. That's lovetosleep.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on the double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally going solo here tonight. Sean Boyd will be back with us next week. Had two great guests so far tonight. Jerry Weinstein of the Colorado Rockies coaching organization, and also Kevin Calabro, lead NBA play-by-play announcer for ESPN Radio and longtime Seattle Supersonics play-by-play man. It's been a good show so far. Great talking to both those guys and getting insight on the world of baseball and instructing catchers, and also the world of play-by-play and what's going on in the NBA with the finals around the corner. The San Antonio Spurs getting set to host the Miami Heat. Tim Duncan, Tony Parker, and the rest of the Spurs, they wanted a shot at Miami, and they got it. And that's exactly what LeBron James had to say. He said, hey, they wanted us, and they're getting us. So be careful what you wish for down in San Antonio, because Miami has been unstoppable the last few years, and they're making a run at a third straight championship. Just remarkable what is going down in South Beach. And of course, so many people hated King James for taking his talents to Miami, joining Dwayne Wade, having Chris Bosh sign there from Toronto a few years ago. And now you've got the three-headed monster down there with the Heat. And guess what? It's done nothing but work. You add support from Ray Allen, Rashard Lewis. They've got Chalmers at guard, lighting up the threes and running the plays. It's just working so very well. And Coach Eric Spoelstra is doing a great job there down in Miami. And, of course, Pat Riley running that team. And you know, Riley did everything right in Los Angeles with the Lakers in the 80s and early 90s. And now he's doing the same thing from the president's office in Miami. And you know what? San Antonio actually is the early favorite, if you believe what Las Vegas has to say. And we all know Vegas does not like to lose money. So there might be a chance that San Antonio will definitely put up a fight in the series. That's for certain. And we'll just have to see. Can Chris Bosh hang with the ageless Tim Duncan? I mean, he's 38 years old, and he doesn't slow down at all. And Tony Parker, same thing. He's not that old, but he's been in the league more than a few days as well, and they just keep plugging along. They keep finding the fountain of youth, but they're also adding to that club too. And Greg Popovich has had the Spurs in contention, it seems like, for a decade, and they continue to be right there, either in the semifinals of the conference playoffs or the finals. And now here they are in the NBA finals, trying to get yet another championship. The Spurs against the Heat, starting later on this week. It'll be a good battle for sure. Talked at the beginning of the show a little bit of baseball, and things are going very well down in the Bay. The Oakland A's continue to roll, and things also going well across the Bay. The San Francisco Giants doing well in the NL West. Up here in the Northwest, the Seattle Mariners getting above 500 by dominating the Yankees in a makeup of a rain delay that was the game rained out in April. And Seattle ran away with it late, a 10-2 win already. Game started at 4 p.m. Pacific. And yesterday, a big day at Safeco Field for rookie starting pitcher Roenis Elias, as he had the Mariners' first complete game, and he looked like a Cy Young Award winner the way he was dealing. And it wasn't just to any old lineup. It was the Detroit Tigers, who are leading just about every offensive category up there with the Oakland A's as well. And you've got Victor Martinez and Cabrera in that lineup, and those guys are murderers row, and Elias shut them down. And it's interesting to note that Elias' complete game, his first as a rookie, the last rookie pitcher in Seattle to do that was one Freddy Garcia. So that's decent company. Freddy Garcia, not a bad pitcher at all, had a long career. And if Elias can be similar in wins and losses as to what Freddy Garcia did, he will have a very, very fine career. Let's head on out to the Holy Smoke Nuts phone lines one final time here tonight and welcome in big time guest number three, Chris Daniels from King 5 News in Seattle. Chris, thanks so much for your time tonight.
Good to talk to you, Sean. I don't know about big time, but, you know, I'm here.
You are most definitely big time, and you've got all the insight on everything Seattle in terms of will there be an arena, will there be a team. You're always there on social media and on King 5 News and King5.com with the latest and greatest. So where do we sit now? Steve Ballmer obviously took his money to Los Angeles, and he's going to take over the Clippers. Chris Hansen's come out and said, you know, we're still moving forward, but will there ever be a team for an arena?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke with Chris Hansen today. We put that on our website on king5.com. He says that this doesn't deter him in any way, that his project continues to move forward, still goes through the environmental review, and as far as the project is concerned, they have the financial backing to do that. Where it changes the conversation, though, and Hansen admitted today, is when we see him try to make a purchase of a franchise without Steve Ballmer in the mix. As a minority investor and the wealth that he brings to the table, the conversation is a bit different. But he says that he has no shortage of people that are willing to be majority or minority investors in an NBA franchise in Seattle that could replace Steve Ballmer. But we will see how this plays out over the next few months.
What are your thoughts on why they don't just go ahead between the Hansen Group and the city, county, and get the place built? That way there's no question as to where an NHL team will play or where an NBA team will play until the building's ready.
Yeah, good question, Sean. It's complicated, though, with the way the Memorandum of Understanding has been approved back in 2012 by the city and the county. It calls for the NBA first in order for the city to issue any sort of bonds on the project. That leaves a lot of the burden of the cost of the arena itself. I mean, already outside of that, outside of the bonds, the burden was on the Hansen Group to build this this new arena. So it doesn't call for the NHL team to necessarily issue any bonds right away. That would happen down the road after an NBA team is acquired. So that's where it gets complicated. And with the NHL, they have a lot of interest in Seattle. They're really, really interested in Seattle. That's why the NHL commissioner and the deputy commissioner flew to Seattle back on May 6th and sat down with the mayor and the county executive. They would like to have the league here. Where it gets complicated is with that arena, the way it has been approved thus far through the memorandum of understanding, and how who exactly picks up the gap there in financing. Is it an NHL owner who wants to come to town that's willing to assume some of the risk and the liability? Chris Hansen today in the interview that we did basically said that if the NHL wants to come in and talk about adjusting the memorandum of understanding, they also need to talk about assuming some of the liability with that new complex. For the Hansen group that still wants to bring the NBA here, it's an interesting play. If the NHL was to come to town first, like almost happened last year with the Phoenix Coyotes, that would probably spur the NBA to follow shortly behind. So it's a complicated situation involving two leagues, two municipalities, so to speak, with the city and county, and a private investor. So there are a lot of moving parts here in this whole thing as it continues to play out.
And making any changes to the MOU to get things happening quicker, to get things happening for the NHL team first, there would be a lot of hurdles to get over because, number one, you've got a new mayor. And not only that, you have a few new faces on the city council that these people might not vote the same way that happened a year and a half ago.
Boy, a lot has changed in the political scene in Seattle in just the last year or so. As you said, Ed Murray, now the mayor, this was not a pet project of his. This mayor, Mike McGinn, and there is a new council member, a socialist, Shama Sawant, who it's really been interesting to watch in the last year, 2 years in Seattle, this kind of political movement that she almost spearheaded for a $15 an hour minimum wage. I was in the council chambers today as they voted on that proposal to raise the minimum wage, and it was filled really with Sawant supporters. In just a short amount of time, she's tapped into something and has a lot of followers on the council as a socialist. This wouldn't necessarily be an issue, the arena being something that she would be a champion of. So there's been a change in the dynamics and the political shift of the council, and potentially that is a factor if anybody was to come back and say, hey, let's talk about changing the MOU, this would be a factor in terms of the political dynamics in the city going forward, and whether they'd be willing to talk about any sort of taxpayer funding. There still, remember, is a vote that still needs to happen after the environmental review, which at last check was slated to be completed at the end of August or the beginning of September on that arena project, whether it works according to the review in SOTO, a key arena, or a no-build option. So there are still a couple of hurdles politically that need to be overcome for Chris Hansen and his group, whether it be with the NBA or whether it be some other form.
Chris Daniels joining us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Chris, what are you hearing about that environmental impact study? It's been pushed back a number of times. Is that on the Hansen side or the city-county side?
It sounds like it's a little bit of both. The city and the county have come back with questions as part of that environmental review. The Department of Planning and Development is the arm of city government that handles that. They've come back and asked questions of the Hansen Group. And really, it was fast-tracked last year during the whole Sacramento Kings saga in terms of the Hansen Group was paying for a lot of things to try and get it done in a short amount of time and answer all the questions in a short amount of time. When that went south for the Hansen Group, they kind of took the foot off the gas pedal, so to speak, band and weren't necessarily putting a lot of money into trying to get it done in a short amount of time. So the foot's been taken off the gas. It's looking like September, August, September, before all those questions are answered. And, you know, politically speaking, again, there is some impetus here for the Hansen Group to try and get it done by the end of this year, because later on in the year, the city and the county council start talking about budgets. Next year, there is a whole election cycle where every county or city council person will be up for re-election because of redistricting in the city of Seattle. So there is a short window here at the end of the year to try and get that environmental review done, approved, and then on the outside of that, talk about the MOU in terms of doing something with the MOU, maybe redrawing it up. Hansen again today reiterated he's not interested in amending that MOU for NHL First. But if the NHL is interested and there's an ownership group that comes in and says perhaps they're willing to put some money into the arena, then some issues are going to open. But that window is closing for this year.
Well, not only that, but the MOU, correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, has a five-year window, and we've already gone 1 year into it.
Yeah, there's about 3.5 years left on that MOU. So, you know, there's always the chance that that could be extended, but you never know what the political makeup, given that it's changed a lot already in a year on the city council, what that could look like in another 3 or 3.5 years. So you really can't predict that at this point.
Chris Hansen with King 5 News, King5.com, with us here on the Double with the Double S Express. And Chris, going through this whole Sonic saga from 06 to when they moved in 08 to now, you've had a few run-ins with David Stern, the no longer, thankfully for Seattle fans, former commissioner of the NBA. What are your thoughts on David Stern and in your dealings with him when you tried to cover the story?
Yeah, I mean, David Stern is a very smart person, a guy who led that league for a long time, a skilled lawyer, watches his words carefully, has a bad taste in his mouth regarding Seattle and anything that comes up with Seattle. I think it was interesting about a year or so ago down in Houston at the All-Star game how he quickly pointed out Frank Chopp as the Speaker of the House in Seattle and had instant recall on his visit to Seattle back in 2006. The times have changed, though, and there is a new commissioner in town, Adam Silver, who has already changed some of the front office makeup at the NBA offices back in New York, already setting a different tone with the Donald Sterling situation, and we have not heard from David Stern. It sounds like Adam Silver is definitely putting his thumbprint on things going forward here, and David Stern is sitting somewhere and not commenting on things right now. For Seattle fans, that's a good thing, but you know, a lot of people over time have credited David Stern with how he led the NBA, and I know that it's been interesting to watch from my seat, watching him answer questions, and you can all see the wheels turning. I mean, the owners over time deferred to him because he was very skilled in how he answered questions, whether they be about Seattle or another subject altogether.
Have you had a chance to speak with Adam Silver yet? And if you have, how has that gone?
I've run into him a couple of times over the course of this story, including in New York City. He's always been very cordial. At that point, though, the times that I've had contact with him, he was the deputy commissioner and deferring to David Stern as well. But he has always been cordial. You've seen him in press conferences. Cordial, not as combative as David Stern, which is was one of his streaks over especially the last decade of his leadership of the NBA. It's been interesting for me to watch just how Adam Silver has handled the media compared to David Stern. Adam Silver, it's just a subtle thing, really, like already has basically got out from behind the table, which is where David Stern liked to do his press conferences, and is now standing in front of a podium, and just simple things, body language things, that it's more relaxed than the Stern press conferences were over time. But really, it's a cliche to say only time will tell, but only time will tell really what Adam Silver brings to the table. And for Seattle fans, he said nothing but positive things about Seattle. You know, and he's very early on into his leadership with the NBA. So really, the book is still out on Adam Silver, but obviously the reviews nationally have been glowing thus far based on his handling of the Donald Sterling situation.
Chris, it's kind of a moot point now, but a lot of our listeners and a lot of Sonic fans have asked, why in the world, if Ballmer's going to go spend $2 billion for the Clippers, wouldn't they have put up some more money to make this arena happen?
You know, it's a great question. I think it's a question that will come up again as this process goes on with the environmental review, with the city council having another shot at it. That question will come up about the private money that's put into it and why exactly Chris Hansen would need financing. I don't have a straight answer for you, but I'm sure that's going to be an answer that will come up here in the future.
Chris Daniels, King 5 News, king5.com. Follow him on Twitter, ChrisDaniels5. Thanks so much for your time tonight. And next time you see Paul Silvey, Tony White, Chris Egan, say hello for me, and thanks so much for your time tonight.
Will do. Good to talk to you, Sean.
There it goes. Chris Daniels, king5.com. Great news reporter there in Seattle with all kinds of insight on the happenings and non-happenings on the NBA, NHL arena. Will that happen? Will a team happen? Who knows? Not even Chris Daniels does, and he's been covering it for many, many years. We're going to go ahead and get to one final break. Stick around, and we'll wrap up the show, recap what's been going on the last hour here on The Double with the Double S Express.
I'm Chris Walls, and I'm a truck driver from Missouri. For 13 hours a night, I sit in my truck and I drive. Out of boredom, I'll stop and eat. If I'm not doing fast food, I guarantee there's a bag of chips open on my dashboard. Along with that, I'm good for about 4 liters of soda a night. That was all until Andro 400. I started out 4 months ago weighing 341 pounds, and since taking Andro 400, I have dropped 45 pounds. I'm sleeping better. There's no cravings. There's no excessive thirst. My knee pain went away. I've had some lower back issues, and I've noticed that that went away, and I can only contribute that to Andro 400. One thing that Andro 400 said on the radio ad says it attacks belly fat. Well, let me tell you, it did. I've lost 6 inches. This product really does work.
So guys, if you'd like to experience similar results, then get Andro 400. The safe, natural, and inexpensive way to boost your testosterone. Go to andro400.com. andro400.com.
Let's get back to great sports talk with big-time guests on The Double with the Double S Express.
Welcome back to On the Double with the Double S Express. Sean Wally piloting the ship tonight as Sean Boyd will be back with us next week for sure. And I know, Sean, you're out there listening, and hopefully you've enjoyed the show, and we got to have some, if not all, these guests back on in the future so you can get your questions in and talk to them as well. I know for sure you would have wanted to chime in with Jerry Weinstein with the Colorado Rockies organization. And, of course, the great Kevin Calabro, longtime play-by-play announcer for the Seattle Supersonics, now the lead NBA play-by-play man for ESPN Radio, as well as calling various sports on the Pac-12 networks. And I didn't get to mention this with Kevin, but we worked a game together for Pac-12 Networks in Kennewick, Washington, a Washington State University basketball game. So that was a fun time, and I got to meet Kevin, and that was a definite pleasure, and it was great having him on the show. So Kevin Calabro, a six-time Sportscaster of the Year in Washington State. And next time he is on the show, I will ask him what that means, if that means much other than, you know, probably heartwarming and makes you feel good. So, and then, of course, just had big-time guest number three, an unusual feat here on the double, Chris Daniels, news reporter at King 5 TV in Seattle, covering the NBA, NHL arena, whether or not that will be built in Seattle and whether or not teams will arrive. You know, the whole Field of Dreams, if you build it, they will come. That is definitely the case in the NHL. They have already been here knocking on the door, like Chris Daniels said, just last month in May, and they are willing, ready, and able, whether it's moving a team or expanding, which expansion will probably happen sooner rather than later to balance out the league in the NHL. The NBA, different story. Expansion's most likely going to be how Seattle gets a team, but the issue is when. And the latest consensus is probably not until the current TV contract expires, which is after next season, the 2014-2015 season. So we'd be looking at probably the earliest a team could be brought to Seattle in an expansion form would be the 2015-2016 season, if it could be done that quick. So, of course, they could play in Key Arena for a while the arena was being built, but that's what they have to do, start the building, get the process rolling, and not just have it on paper as it sits now with the Memorandum of Understanding. Great show tonight for you here on The Double with the Double S Express. Be sure to check out all of our archives available on our BBS Radio page, bbsradio.com/DSX, as well as our very own website, double-s-express.com. You can also find us, if you are an iPhone user, on iTunes, iTunes Podcasts, as well as Stitcher Radio. Almost too many options to find us here on The Double, but we don't want to leave anybody out. So definitely check us out, as well as find us on Facebook and Twitter at Double S Express, X-P-R-E-S-S. Sean Boyd, miss you tonight, man. Can't wait to have you back next week. Be sure you tune in next Monday night and every Monday night, 7 p.m. Pacific, on The Double with the Double S Express.
Thanks for listening to On The Double with the Double S Express. Join us next Monday for great sports talk and big-time guests. On The Double with the Double S Express.